First speaker this morning is Deb Paulson. I met Deb for the first time last year when she came over to do a presentation to the Technology Futures Unit at the Department for Children's Schools and Families. I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I don't think people in the department were either. And I was just totally blown away by the work that that Deb was doing. Some of the work involves mobile technologies. Some of the work simply takes pupils outside the school environment into far more interesting environments and then uses technology to engage them in deep learning activities. So, are we just about ready?
No.
Keep talking.
Microphones are very tempting. I'm a big karaoke fan, so sorry if I break into song. I want to apologise to anyone who was at MLearn. There might be a bit of repeat here. I'm from Australia, and I'm both an academic and an independent designer. And in my past 15 years, I've been making games for education in a number of various different contexts. The very first project I made was a key competencies, 5 CDs, 2 videos, and 3 booklets in the early 90s, which helped train teachers in key competencies in teaching, and that was quite interesting. We've come a long way since then. The most interesting thing for me at the moment is what mobiles actually bring into the area of games and social networks. So my interest is that I make a lot of games that have a lot of aspects of both gaming and social networks, but when mobility comes into play, what does that mean? I mean, and the key aspect of mobility is that you move and you're mobile. So the interesting thing for me is how can we then take what is learnt in the classrooms, what is understood in the home, what is done in the playgrounds, and somehow make some links towards that. So the most important thing to me is how learning is valued by learners in more than just the classroom. How do they start to see themselves as constant learners in every environment? How do we make the world a muse for these students, and how do we make it a stage for them to express themselves creatively and feel like real active participants in the culture, in the broader culture, because that's what learning should give kids, is that they start to see themselves as active participants in the world around them. So that's what I'm most interested in, is how can we use mobiles and games to start making some real bridges between the various different environments, both material, both the physical environments and the virtual environments that the children now find themselves in. So that's most interesting to me. Another interesting thing to me is too, is once I've made my few points, I'll just start showing you some stories. And the other thing that's most interesting to me is how, when I've done some pilots of taking games and mobiles into the classroom, of course, we all know that the first thing that happens is, because it's so novel, is they increase their engagement. And I'm interested in what happens once we've got them engaged. So we understand that novelty may wear off in this area in some time, so we need to now start to think of what is the actual interactions that are occurring. So one of the most interesting things that are happening now through the idea of bringing the novel and the contemporary use of tools into the classrooms is that teachers are finding that it's actually improving their relationships with the students, because the students respect that the teacher is trying to engage in their contemporary issues and their contemporary tools. And that's a really important step. So already the kids are engaged. But what's more important is they want to do things that are unexpected, because they know how to go to YouTube and learn how to play the guitar. They know, you know, how to go to a social network and share stories and make things together. So what they want to know from the school is, you know, how they can use these networks and these games more interestingly. So it's not enough to just engage in these tools and these technologies. What we need to do now is give them literacies that make them make sure that when they're in these spaces, they're having more meaningful interactions with others. And not just now, but in their future workforce. So it's not only about transgressing the different spaces and places, but also making sure that the students are using the same tools they might be using in their other everyday parts of their lives. So what's important to me is that students are learning to value learning. And as we've heard a lot from here on, is the problem with assessment. And I come across that a lot every time I introduce my projects to schools. They worry about how to assess it. But in a lot of ways, the teachers are always the ones who are able to work that out into their curriculum. But what's really an amazing outcome from some of these projects is that the kids, through playing these games, are not talking about the technology. Like, we really underestimate how they respond to these things. They're not that impressed by using the mobile phone in games. They already do that. What impresses them is the activities that they might do. So, and what they talk about when they play these games is they actually start to be quite self-critical, and they start to be quite critical about the other activities they do. So I'm just going to take you through a couple of the games just to demonstrate how that might happen. The first game that these are just in the last few years, these games, but the first mobile game that I attempted was quite inspired by a British group called the Blast Theory. Does anyone know about them? And the Cloud Makers, ARGs, alternate reality games. Because that, to me, alternate reality games are games that engage people in their everyday environments to uncover clues and facts. And that was really interesting to me, because that meant that games were about making the real world look interesting, not a virtual world, because virtual worlds are actually really limited and boring, you know. Once you know how to shoot everything, that's about it, you know. So what's interesting to me is how we use a game to trick kids into finding the world more interesting. So Scoot is a what we might call a location-based game, and what you'll find with my games too is all lo-fi. Everyone can make these. So what Scoot is basically, you can see at the top, it's a virtual world full of characters that are basically Australian characters. And it kind of mimics some of the real world. And so they go online and they can chat with friends. But to really get extra points and to get extra inventory to dress up their characters, they have to go to the real world and follow SMS clues to uncover facts about the site. And along the way, they find, because this is a dodgy carny world. Can I say that word here? Carny? Yeah. Dodgy carny world. Where they're trying to bring their carnival to this world, and it's creating chaos. So the game is about kids starting to feel a sense of loyalty and agency in their own sight, and they're going to save this world. So they follow clues in order to find these carnival boxes that have been hidden throughout the sites. And these carnival boxes are experimental interfaces that I've made with students. So the game is made for locals and by locals, and the locals also help me write the SMS clues. So students are engaged in the making and the playing at all times. So that's basically what happens. But some of the nice things that are said about Scoot is that my favourite thing is kids always run around saying, oh, now everything looks like a game. And that's like one of the nicest things anyone could possibly say about the game, because what's happened there is, in that one statement, it means that they are starting to see the world full of potential. Okay, now the world looks like it's full of inventory for learning and for making things and for creating things, which is just a wonderful turn of events. The other one is a mother who said, you brought his world to my world, because we play this in libraries and museums and in public parks. So what Scoot is about, it's about taking carnival and a sense of play and a sense of agency to spaces, to learning spaces that sometimes children don't feel they have an active role in. So they get to shout and scream in these places, but at the same time, the parents, because it's made for families, I forgot to say that, it's made for families to play together. So what they do is they go through libraries and they learn all about it, and they do it together. Of course, the kids are pretty grumpy in the beginning because they don't like to play games with their parents, but by the end of it, they're pretty much collaborating. But most of the time, what the kids say is, I just found myself learning. So the whole thing of kind of fun first, game first, and then learn, and then start to learn was a really, really important aspect to the game. I'm just going to play you a video because, just because it's funny. I'll just explain. This is one of the boxes that we hid in the museum. And this one is just using very lo-fi. It's a microphone that's used. There's Farlap. Does anyone know about the famous horse that its body is in this museum? It's quite morbid, actually. And we've got the cousin. One of the characters is a cousin called Farcical. And he is a lazy horse who doesn't want to race, but you need him to win the race so you get the next clue. But what you have to do is you have to cheer him on and you have to shout for a long period of time into this microphone, which is very disruptive in a museum. The security guards were all over the place. They're a bit tentative at first. They won. So that was one of the first things they found. So that sort of loosened them up, that this game was really about them doing whatever they wanted. So they sort of ran around now going, yeah, I'm going to just run around and shout and scream and throw stuff. Because another one of the games was throwing balls at walls and making virtual explosions on them. So that was fun. But the really interesting thing about this too was that what was interesting was hearing people's stories of playing the game. So they were instantly telling each other and meeting other family groups and telling them what happened. But one of the most common things was, they realised it was really simple. The SMS, they realised, was, you know, something they had with them all the time. So they started asking, can we make this ourselves? And then I had an aha moment, and I realised that the power of mobile games isn't that I get to tell my story of the carnival, but that everyone gets to tell their story in this place. So I made a huge switch and decided to make the back end of Scoot available to everyone. So I created an interface which was an authoring tool for people to be able to make their own Scoots. So this became very, very important. And making a game is very, very complex. And because we've made five major events over the last 3 years, we've learnt a lot about what makes a successful game, having had to design them ourselves. So you go from a very complex set of things you can work with to a very simple set of instructions. And that's really, really important. I have to make a bit of a confession right now that I used to play Dungeons & Dragons quite severely in my 20s. And what I loved about that game is that it was just a framework and it was manuals and you made up your own stories and you can make up your own adventures. So I've always had that as part of my game design ideology. So I've created a product called Milk. And Milk is the mobile informal learning kit. I dropped informal because some formal things happen as well, and it sounded too formal. So it's just the mobile learning kit now. So basically what I've done is I've created a web interface that basically is four steps. You upload a map, you put some points on the map, and you give those points an SMS, clue and answer. You can put up images, and kids design these together. And basically they save it, and other kids in their class can play it instantly. So that's its premise. But what we've done is when we first built it, we thought we were building it for teachers to make excursions so that they could take kids to museums and they could take them places. And instead of having this sort of dry paper-based questionnaire, they could make an SMS-based questionnaire. But again, to me, that was still just a bit too novel. And when I first went to a school and showed them Milk, what we realised very quickly was that the learning happened in designing the game, not in playing the game. Answering questions wasn't where the learning was. The learning was in gathering information, researching the area, tying links to subject matter to that place, and creating a scenario for the game, and then creating an SMS questions and answers. So posing the questions is much more of a learning activity than answering them. So what we discovered very quickly, and this is a trial I did with Paul, who's up next, in Botanic Gardens, and I've trialled this in many different places. And in Botanic Gardens, they were introduced to the tool, then they went out and discovered the gardens, they selected some spots around the gardens, they came back and they researched a whole lot of information about the different plants, and then they came up with game narratives, like imagine you're a pioneer to this country and you need to set up house and you need medicinal and you want herbs and you want food, and you had to go around and collect what a pioneer's house might require from the garden. So they went and they did some research, and then they created a tour for their classmates to find these herbs and learn all about them. And it was just a simple process of putting them up, testing, and then they played each other's games. And this all happened in an afternoon. So making a game itself, once you've got all your research, takes about 30 minutes. It doesn't take very long to make. So, and then they assess each other's work. So the Milk Kit, the Milk website, has discussion forums. It has places where you can also SMS just a note. So if you're on site and you go, oh, I found something more interesting, you can send the note to your journal. So that's what Milk is. And here's some of the interesting trials that we've done. Another trial that we did in Adelaide, I must say I'm from Brisbane, which is a tropical north of Australia, and Adelaide's down south. Quite different temperatures. And the day that I turned up for this one, I realised I had a group of visibly impaired students, which I thought, oh my goodness, how am I going to do that? But what was really, really lovely about this one was that there was groups of kids with severe visible disabilities and kids that had no disabilities, but they made games for each other. And I was really nervous. I thought, how are we going to do this? But what happened was is the kids, when they went out to make the game, suddenly they had to see the world through a child's eyes that can't see. They started to listen for sounds. They started to feel for different things, and they started to listen and then they made games for each other, and they had a wonderful time. And that was like a real lovely aha moment for me as well, that this might be quite a nice way to bridge across different types of groups as well. This was Trinity Bay, which is far north, and this was with a group of what we call reluctant learners, so kids with ADD and Asperger's, who are typically a bit naughty too. So we did some trials with them, and their engagement levels were quite outstanding. But I'm also wary that this is a novelty factor. So, but what's interesting is once they make a game, like they live in a town which is a tourist town, and they were asked to make a game for tourists, and they were all like, tourists suck. You know, they hate, you know, they live in this town, tourists come and go as they please, they shop, they, you know, and they leave, you know, and they don't have much respect for that. So I changed the spec to imagine you're a 14-year-old emo girl and you've come to live in Cairns with your family. How do you make Cairns more interesting to them? Because Cairns on the surface is very much a tourist destination, but there is, of course, a history another thing. So that said it a little bit differently. So one group, this lovely group here, they selected some old nursing home, which apparently has ghosts, and a cemetery. So, of course, apparently that's very emo. And do you all know what emo means? Oh, it's kind of a innocent goth, okay? It's kids who are emotional, right? So they wear dark hair and, I don't know, there's a type apparently. And what they did was they did this sort of quite a dark story, but what you realised while you started playing this SMS game that you were actually revealing a family history as you went through these places, which was really interesting. So they learnt all about how you might read the narrative of a cemetery, and they passed that on and told family histories, which was really, really lovely. I'm not sure if I have time for it. Am I doing
new ideas and stuff? She wasn't brought up on technology.
They're talking about a teacher.
It might help her understand more how we use technology and how it can be used in an educational way.
So this is that group, and they're just kind of making some comments.
As technology gets greater, we'll become more
distant
from technology, and we couldn't understand it in the future, therefore we couldn't make it, we couldn't improve it.
More like teamwork, I'm going to be the team, and you have to learn to like respect opinions of other people. Also, you have to learn how to use programming sort of to try and create the game, so yeah, that shows that our mind's growing.
But when you first learn, you just think it's really fun, but afterwards you realise you actually learn a fair bit.
Well, I reckon it's a way for like teachers to learn how kids want to learn. You actually think about it, and it's like you can log onto the wiki and see what everyone else has done, and test out whether they're going as well as you are or if you're going worse than them.
It's like when you go home, most teenagers like found whatever to do on the internet, and while you're already on there you think, okay, why would I think to do on the internet at school? And you automatically do it. Like not many teenagers go home and look through history books and that and think, oh, I can do this, why can't I do this?
Yeah, because it's so fun. We actually want to do Milk.
Yeah, HBN, maths, a lot. Music too.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So what was interesting there, when we asked them questions about milk, they didn't talk about, oh, I loved using the mobile, or, oh, yeah, I love games. They were talking about learning. You know, they were saying, they were starting to say straight away how they could see it being used in other subjects. You know, what Mrs. Laz should do, because she's used to slates. I don't know if Miss Laz would like that. But what was interesting was they felt like they became partners in learning. So this became a really critical aspect. So what happened now is because we leave milk in the hands of the students, the teacher doesn't need to be too concerned about understanding how to program mobile phones and to do this. It's really simply just putting text into fields, and then you've got your work available on all these devices. But what was really interesting was how they responded to the fact that they felt like they were agents in designing learning. They felt like they had a reason to know what the teacher was trying to teach them in a curriculum, because they were taking what they were learning and they were motivated to create their own learning objects. So instead of just understanding the facts, they wanted to know how the facts would fit into a scenario that other people could learn from. So that's a really big leap from learning the facts to taking the facts and situating them into their own learning practice. And they they knew that was happening, but what was more important to them was that the teacher was letting them do that and let them be partners in that learning. And what they also understood was they didn't go, oh, we know more about this than teachers, how some teachers might be concerned. They actually really valued the teacher because they were making games for each other, it really mattered to them whether the games were good or not. So the teacher was really, really important in terms of how would I use this information differently? How can I make this more interesting? Is there more I should know about this? And because they're very much concerned about how each other think about their work more so than the teacher. So it was really interesting about how the learning was kind of very much on a sort of partner level with the teacher. We've also had it used in New York recently. Another colleague, Katie Sallon, who you might have heard of, she's a games theorist who has started an Institute of Play in Brooklyn. And she's used milk with an MA program. It's been based around milk to look at how we can start using these things in teaching practices. And she's made some interesting games where they go around the streets and look for clues. But what was problematic for the fifth and sixth graders, like the primary school, was they weren't really allowed outside the classroom. So she looked at ways for using milk inside the classroom, because apparently letting them roam the streets of Brooklyn with their mobile phones wasn't a good idea. So they did a inside school peace and war. So what was interesting about that one was, and she did a few others where they just walked around the schools, but what they also did was as they started to plot that in the city of New York. So they plotted peace and war decisions through the city. So what they were taking was narratives that seemed so distant and so removed from them and placed them in their own environment. And suddenly the empathy levels about the ideas of peace and war changed quite a lot from doing that. So that was really interesting. I mean, the kids start off just going, oh, yeah, fight back, until they started to uncover the implications and consequences from their actions, which was quite interesting. This is another way of using it, which was, this is gifted and talented students. So again, I'm trying to vary the types of people who use the game and the context that they use them. And the gifted and talented poetry students were thinking, oh, this will be a challenge because it's not really games, it's not really this, that and the other. And what they did was they chose an era in poetry. They were studying The Raven and a number of other poems. And they basically had to make games for each other that told the story of that era of poetry. And there were some really interesting games. But what happened was is that they, as you can see, are virtually located in the UK. But what they did was is the narratives were therefore available anytime, anywhere. So on the way home on their bus, they could play someone's game. So it wasn't situated. So they could just get the questions and answers. So what was nice about this one was there were some funny games. So, you know, One kid said, you have had a bomb strapped to your leg with gaffer tape and you can't take it off because you're really hairy and that would hurt. So you need to travel back in time and learn really quickly about this particular era. I think it was the Elizabethan era. And you went back and you were tested by all these characters in history and you would have to answer these questions. So they set the scenario, so they set this virtual world. So as you're doing this, you're on a quest. But the questions were still very sort of dry, kind of SMS questions. But what was interesting here is they went way beyond what was required. All they needed to do was create a whole list of questions and answers, like a test. But what they did do instead, because they used the term game, they created a whole scenario on top of that. So the scenario and the story was also quite an interesting way of interpreting the curriculum. So that was really interesting. So they went way beyond. And what the teacher was concerned with here was she was concerned if she had to take on a new tool and she only had 3 weeks to do this subject, that she wasn't going to get through it. But what she found, in fact, was it actually accelerated their participation in the project. They were motivated, they started researching straight away, and they understood what was asked of them. So it was really interesting that in the end she said there was an acceleration rather than a slowdown. I won't play the video, though, but she liked it. So MILC is now available. You can sort of email me or order a password. So, and all I'm looking for is people to test it in various different areas so that I can improve that. But at the same time, my research position with this project ends in a few months, so I just want to get it living a little bit more. The other project, which is also something that you can use straight away, is Cypher Cities. And Cypher Cities is MILC and Scoot, but for the public. So has anyone seen geocaching or Facebook or anything like this? You can just log on and start making your own games. And so we've got a whole bunch of people playing and they've made games around our area. So that's cyphercities.com. So basically, my motto is tools for making tools. Okay? So for me, what's more interesting is getting an infrastructural, not a product, not a particular content to suit a particular curriculum, but tools that can be infrastructure in a school that people can use in any way, in any form, with any subject matter, and it's just available, just like a blackboard. But so that's kind of my hope, that instead of kind of making some assumptions about what curriculum needs what kinds of ICT and how they should use mobile, is to think about how, and I'm hoping in the future, instead of just having tools for making content, we actually have tools for making tools. So teachers can actually tweak how the actual system works as well. And, you know, and we can think that way because we didn't realise 5 years ago that people could make mobile content quite so easily. You know, that was something where we'd go, oh, I don't think so. I'd have to program and blah, blah, blah. But I'm hoping that in the next 5 years or so that teachers are actually able to change the systems and the infrastructure, not just add content to somebody else's limited system. So for me, what I'm trying to promote at the moment is not necessarily to use, definitely not to use products off the shelf, because we know that products off the shelf like Civilization and a number of other games are made with a market agenda. They're made with economic, they're not made with pedagogical agendas. And making custom-made games with web tools and mobile tools, it really isn't that difficult. And it's quite low-fi, and there's a lot of products out there where you can access these things. So to me, it's the learning objectives and the learning outcomes and the interactions you want to have made as a designer are the fundamental, and then you build the tools on top of that. But so that's my thing, tools for making tools in the future and partners in learning, because the only way forward isn't about training teachers and putting pressure on all these people, but it's about making things available that give people access to these things and making sure that the putting some emphasis back on the students and letting them become partners. So that's kind of my message for the day. Thanks very much.
What's your experience of projects being sustained after you've been involved the first time? Have they carried on? Have certain teachers carried on with them? Have whole schools carried on with them?
That's a really good question. At the moment, I'm under pressure from a research centre to commercialise, which is a change in role for me because, you know, I like to cave and design, you know. But I've had a lot of schools are still using it. any schools here and in the US are using it. But what's interesting to me, and my biggest issue at the moment, is that a lot of people, consultants that are brought into the research centre, are throwing a lot of old-fashioned business models at me and business strategies for distributing this sort of thing. You know, it's quite simple to me, is you just make it available. You know, if it's federally funded, as it is, you just make it available and let schools use it. And, you know, that was my answer, but of course that's not what the answer they like. So there's a lot of difficulties. Like we heard a talk yesterday where that innovation doesn't happen unless 3,000 people are using it. Well, my question is how do you go from doing good research, having some really good evidence that it works, and having a lot of people in demand to use it, to making it a product in a commercial sense? But I think it's, as other people have said, it's very much up to the education department to make these things available, instead of a researcher or a designer having to go out and recruit users and get it going. So what is interesting about that is, what are the distribution models? Who's responsible for getting these into schools at an infrastructural level? Because a lot of schools are thrown a lot of products all year round. And so it's a really good question, and it's a really difficult answer, because we're surrounded still by some fairly old business strategies that don't quite work in this way. They still want to have subscription or license models. But you give a teacher a subscription for a class, she's got a maths class, but she's actually got five classes. You know, so I'm quite battling with that. I'm kind of looking for sort of... and in Australia too, it's the learning is... We have states that govern the schools, and then inside their public and private schools and inside their region. So it's hard to distribute in a central kind of way. But yeah, but whoever wants to use it, it's open to use at the moment.
Hi there.
Hi.
Can you tell me, what are the key challenges to uptake of a game like that, and also how you engage staff who are perhaps more resistant to these kind of technologies in the school?
Yeah, great question. I rely heavily on what we call teacher champions. So we offer professional development courses where about 20 teachers come in, we show it to them, and they take it back to the classroom. Now, those teachers are already convinced that they should be doing these things. So when they come, you know, they're already convinced. So they kind of, a lot of times they go back to the schools and the kids start using it. And actually it's the kids that are making the demands on the students to use these things. So they've become our best asset in terms of, like you saw in that video, we're now going to show Mrs. Laz how she should use it in social science. We're going to show them how they should use it. So that's been a thing. But one of the biggest problems is when I go to introduce it to a school and I say, I've got an authoring tool for you to make games for mobiles. I get like these squishy faces. And there's like a bit of fear and anxiety. So the interesting thing is here is, I think once there are a lot more of these things out there and being demonstrated and being used, a lot of that anxiety will drop. But we're just at the beginning of introducing these things into schools. So there is an anxiety level on how they might be adopted and who's going to use them. But I think as soon as we get some really good best practice happening in schools, where partnerships are occurring between students and teachers, and that they're both building these kinds of things, I think soon enough, the newness of it all won't be so much of a problem. But what we need is, we don't need to talk about it, we don't need research papers, we need demonstrations of it working in schools, and we need to talk much more about that. And we need to see this working in the hands of the kids for schools to take this on. So I'm trying to create kind of a community portal where all of these kinds of stories about the use can inspire new types. Because what I'm kind of tired of is the discussion stopping at banning or stopping at assessment, instead of thinking about what the opportunities and how can we inspire new types of discussions around these things. So that's really important to me, but Paul's ready.